The rest of the agenda right now is that we are going to entertain to hear report backs from our 9 conferences. And we ask the reporters from those conferences to please have a seat up front so that we can move quickly to the podium to give your report. And after those reports, please hear me out. This is the most important thing that we want to do in this second half. After those reports, we're going to ask you to make input, final input to this conference, and we'll create another stack line queue to answer the question, how can we build a broader movement, one movement, by making connections between our 9 conference issues. Everybody got that? How can we build a broader one movement by making connections between these conference issues that we've all participated in during the last couple days? So that'll be the key, and that'll be after our presentations. Also, we want another form of feedback, and Amkar will explain that.
Hey guys, how's everyone doing?
All right.
I've just been thinking, I want to introduce myself. I'm Omkar, I work for Liberty Tree. It's been really good to be a part of this conference. And, you know, as I think, there's a lot of different questions and thoughts coming to my mind. And I realize, like, we have a tough challenge, right, taking on. And if I really want to summarize what it is, in a lot of ways, I think it's about, you know, challenging power and creating equality, right? But, you know, I think it's also important to reflect back on our own lives and think about them. Like, who doesn't like power? Like, who doesn't want to feel special? Who doesn't like to have access? You know, so how do we keep working on these things within ourselves, even as we are working on them outside and in our organizations and in our communities, you know? So, there is no destination, right? When have we arrived? You know, when we've stopped the pipeline or... You know, when we've, you know, taken on a certain corporation, you know, have we arrived? You know, this is always going to be a work in progress, you know. So how do we keep, you know, for me, it's really thinking about how do we stay in the process, you know, while we're working on certain destinations as well. So everyone should have a couple note cards, you know, and I wanted to, in honor of democracy and really, and Kaylee's going around, if people want more, don't have note cards, if you could raise your hand. You should. There's a couple folks. You should have 3 note cards, right? And we really want to have a space that we can have everybody's voice heard in some way, shape, or form. You know what? Hopefully, you've had chances to do that through the conventions. But I have 2 questions for people. You know, first question, if you could write the title at the top of your note card, is, you know, what did I like, and what would I like to see more of? Right, that's 1. And you could, you know, break them up into 2 separate bullet points. And then the second question, you know, when I think about awareness in one of the communities, we talk about 3 different stages, right? There's head, heart, and hand, right? So there's like an intellectual awareness, there's an emotional embodied awareness, and then there's action, you know, like, so what, you know, on the second card, if you could write what specific actions. And that's my challenge, like, that you're going to take when you leave here. You know, and make 2 copies of that one. So what we can have that, you know, and leave 1 of those copies with us. So again, 1 card that says, you know, what did I like and what would I like to see more of about the conference? That's 1. And 2 is, what actions am I going to take? And make 2 copies of that card and leave 1 with us. So thank you. So please, you know, please take some time.
If you want to,
I mean, just really up to folks, whatever feels right.
Thank you, Amkar.
Well, in the spirit of the conference that I represent, Media Democracy, we'll do this first presentation without the media. My name is Norman Stockwell. I work with WRT Community Radio here in Madison, Wisconsin. And to together with Frank Emspach of the Workers' Independent News, we organized what I'm calling the media democracy track of this democracy convention. And as I emphasize to people in each of our workshops, I feel that all of these issues are so intertwined that we really shouldn't think of this as nine separate conventions. This is one big convention with many tracks and many issues coming together and intertwining and interacting throughout the week. Speaking of media, I also want to thank the folks from the Uptake up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that have been streaming these plenaries live free of charge, and you can go back and check them out on their website, theuptake.org, as well. So on the PowerPoint slides that would have been showing behind me right now, the first one says, our Media Democracy Conference looked at four issues which centered around these themes: the role of two new media forms, comics and graphic novels, and social media, and the importance of access for unrepresented and underrepresented voices, including working people and dissident voices. Slide two. The four sessions illustrated how new tools and technologies, especially the web, give new opportunities for outreach and access with a lower cost threshold. However, corporate consolidation also poses new threats to these modes of access. Slide three. Funding for alternative media projects continues to decrease, and many outlets are threatened with closure or reduction of service. A new model of support must be found. It is clear from history that news media, especially with diverse voices and opinions, cannot survive merely through commercial advertising revenue. And number four, new tools and technologies are emerging regularly and continue to foster more democracy in our media, but movements need to recognize the importance of supporting these media as a part of their work, not just as an appendix to it. Media reform and the building of a vibrant alternative media is not a separate issue. Rather, it is intertwined into all of the issues. Thank you very much.
Greetings.
Hello.
I'm Greg Coleridge, member of the Program on Corporations Law and Democracy Collective, as well as a staff person with the Northeast Ohio American Friends Service Committee. I'm here to report on the Constitutional Reform Conference drafted by David Kopp. There are a couple of five points that we wanted to share to reflect on some of the observations and conclusions drawn from the multitude of workshops and plenaries. And they are as follows. One, the current social, political, and economic systems of ours are racist, sexist, and classist. Two, the United States Constitution is, quote, the supreme law of the land, and supports and protects the racist, sexist, and classist system. So we need a new legal framework to move us toward liberation, peace, justice, ecology, and democracy. Three, an overarching question that we all need to grapple with is, do we need an entirely new constitution or merely a series of amendments? Four, in the quest for all of the above, we must create racially and ethnically diverse processes and gatherings across this country that represent various sectors of society to participate in demanding this new society and new legal framework. And lastly, we must create a social movement that is broad, deep, educated, nonviolent, and militant, that commits itself to independent political action. So as we go forth from here today, may we all be a part of this reflection and of this quest.
I'm Leah Bolter. I was one of the conveners of the Democratizing Defense Conference. And as an organizer of this, or convener of this conference, I have to say that we did not really think of this in a coordinated way to address or kind of strategize about how we can implement democracy in our defense system. We're not to that point yet. I'm an anti-war activist, and so I see everything as trying to reduce militarism, trying to end wars, trying to prevent wars, and that's kind of the angle I go at. So we talked about in our conference, we talked about how the rule of democracy has been lost in many ways, within the military, outside the military, how we decide to use wars, how we decide to use our military force. And I think for me personally, it was kind of revelatory to understand, it was sort of an epiphany kind of moment to realize that the anti-war activism work I've been doing all along has been good, of course, but it's been addressing the symptoms of war. It's been addressing the effects of war. And the real bottom line problem is the system itself, capitalism, and our military society, greed, capitalism, profit making. And I have a t-shirt that says greed kills, and I think in no better example of that is in our defense system, that greed is running our foreign policy, greed is shaping our military policy. So the three kind of points I came to was that militarism, the military-industrial complex, greed, profit, corporate profit, and capitalism are really the driving force behind our foreign policy and our defense, our use of our defense department, and that our government emphasis, overwhelming emphasis on militarism and defense, and I always use that with air quotes, has destroyed democracy in all other sectors of our government. The money alone, prevents us from having truly equal access to education or clean air. War and militarism are a huge contributor to loss of democracy. And so lastly, I think that people who do anti-war work, who do anti-militarism work, we need to step back and figure out a way that we can attack the root problem. It's not just preventing a war or ending a war or voting down the F-35 or whatever. It's attacking this whole source of the problem, and that's how we have to work together. And so this democracy convention has been a superb opportunity to see how one aspect affects another. How the absence of democracy in our media affects our propensity to go to war. How the lack of absence in different sectors. So I think this has been kind of maybe it's just me. I finally woken up and realized that maybe other people have gotten it all along. But democracy is if we can fix that, then we'll fix everything. So I think I'm going to be expanding my horizons as an anti-war activist and become a pro-democracy activist.
Hi y'all, I'm Justin Wiedes, founding member and organizer of Occupy Wall Street and principal of the Paul Robeson Freedom School in Brooklyn, New York. Sorry, I was out late singing last night with many of you, so I've lost some of my voice, but we've all lost a lot of our voice, so we're in the same boat. I'm going to speak about democratizing education. This came off the back of the National Student Power Convergence, which happened right before this convention, and so we had many, many great organizers and student activists like Roshan Bliss, who really should be up here, but he had to head out yesterday. So I'm going to speak on his behalf. I'm trying to bullet point three main threads in this conversation about democratizing education. The first is defending the attacks against public education, whether at the K-12 level, through the privatization and defunding of public schools, or at the college level, through the same privatization and also the student loan crisis. which is making college simply unaffordable for so many young people. That's the first bullet. The second one would be building student power through student-led initiatives to confront the attacks on public education. Again, we had many great folks from the Student Power Convergence who spoke about the need to organize young people at all levels of education to confront these issues, to bring them to the forefront, to really join forces in coalition with teachers, parents, staff, administrators, and all supporters of public education to confront these massive attacks on our education system. And then the last one is a little bit forward thinking, which is envisioning alternative models for popular education. Examples are things like our own Paul Robeson Freedom School, which is a re-envisioning of the original Freedom Schools in Mississippi and Alabama in the 60s, which you know came into place in order to address the needs of communities that weren't being served, especially people of color, by a segregated, unfunded, unsupported education system. And in many ways, we're re-confronted with many of these issues today as our national priorities seem to have moved so far away from education. And so bringing back the spirit of the Freedom Schools, but broadening the vision of them for a 21st century model. At the college level, we're seeing also free universities. And a great example is the Free University in New York City, set up by members of Occupy Wall Street to provide really beautiful, radical education, political education for people to confront and really understand the language and the context of this current attack on public education. There are many other models that have been discussed, very local educational models all the way up to national organizing. But these were the summary of the Democratizing Education Conference. So thank you.
Hi everybody, I'm Jill Stein, and I was one of the participants in Earth Democracy. Our convener is Nancy Price. Are you here, Nancy? She may be too busy. Oh, there she is. Okay, she had a moment to sit down. But thank you, Nancy, for being our convener. And as you can see, we had trouble getting this onto one slide, which I think was a reflection of our enthusiasm for all the things that were coming into really incredible, empowering focus. And so I think we were writing our basic position paper for the next step as we sat down to write our bullet points. So we haven't quite gotten it down to the bullet points, but I'll try to summarize it. So basically, you know, the idea that the crisis in the earth, and most notably the climate crisis, is really connected with all the other crises that have brought us here on all of our nine tracks, and in particular the crisis of the predatory economy, overall ecological destruction, expanding war, and unraveling democracy. They're all so intimately connected. Just imagine if we had a unified vision, an action agenda that enabled us to all stand up together. I mean, it would bring the destructive machine to an incredible screeching halt if we actually had an agenda that brought together the one out of every two Americans who are in poverty, the 39 million students who are indentured servants, the one out of every three African American males who are basically victims of the criminal justice system, and so on. The list goes on. And so we talked a lot about how we could bring this together in a unifying vision, an action agenda, to get our constituencies together around a system change solution that is as big as the crisis itself, and that we should settle for nothing less than what will actually solve the crisis. And that if we can do this, we will be an absolutely unstoppable force, not only to stop climate change, but to stop the whole predatory corporate capitalist system that has brought us to all these crises. So we're toying with this idea of a global climate convergence. And whether we call it a climate convergence or a justice convergence, I think we're still, you know, all this is under discussion. But the idea of some kind of a global convergence for people, peace, and the planet, or maybe it's people, peace, and Mother Earth, that too needs to be sorted out. But you get the idea. And the thinking is, well, let's put a timeline on this. Let's just start something happening and call for a series of global conferences starting Earth Day of this year, of 2014, upcoming Earth Day to May Day, connecting sort of in vision Earth and people who are struggling, and to build solidarity through this conference with labor, youth, poor, indigenous, immigrants, faith-based, etc., and to use that conference not only to expand the identity of the climate movement, which has been pretty focused down on tar sands or pipelines and things like that, but really expand it, and at the same time to develop a set of specific demands and momentum for a global direct action campaign in the fall of 2014. 2 million people came out for Monsanto a couple weeks back with like 2 weeks notice on Facebook. There were millions of people who came out. And in the aftermath of that, Monsanto says, okay, we'll get out of Europe. Just imagine if 2 million came out for GMOs and we were all coming out on the same day, including, you know, public banks and all the rest. It would be an absolutely unstoppable force. So a few other just details about what that agenda looks like. It's a new green economy founded on human, civil, labor, health, indigenous, and earth rights. And it has some specifics that are suggested at this point. A Green New Deal to put everybody back to work at the same time that we jumpstart the green economy. An economic bill of rights, including public higher education, maintaining our public school system, et cetera, bailing out the students, putting the bankers in jail where they ought to be. An international agreement to eliminate carbon emissions by 2030, which we can do, and it can pay for itself. A 50% cut in military spending, respect for treaties establishing indigenous rights, which protect all of our rights to water and land protection, new legal constructs including earth rights, rights of our communities to defend themselves against invasion by corporations and so on, and democracy reforms. And then a footnote that we reject what is put out as climate and environmental policy now. Just about everything coming out of the conventional political parties is essentially greenwashed, and public relations campaigns for natural gas, biofuels, nuclear cap and trade, et cetera. We're saying no to the whole pack of lies. GMOs, commodification of the commons, and predatory private-public partnerships. So we sort of offer that call for a global convergence, and are interested in others who might want to work on this as well. Thanks.
I'm Ellen Brown. Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers had to go home early, so I'll do a summary of the economic democracy track. The economic democracy runs through all nine of the tracks of the conference because everybody needs money to do what they want to do. And so the first thing we have to do is to get the power to create and issue and control our money back from Wall Street and big business. So running through our tracks were basically three main themes. One was how to break our dependence on Wall Street and big business. Two was setting up alternative models. These would be like alternative communities, cooperatives, and alternative economic models. And three is how to stop further encroachment by Wall Street and big business with things like TPP as something that's of immediate, needs immediate attention. so I'll go into this. Ways to break our dependence on Wall Street include creating complementary currencies. I mean, these are things that were discussed in the tracks. Creating complementary currencies, investing locally, creating distributed energy so that every home or business becomes a contributor, something like post office banks, Occupy, Money Cooperative, and public banks, establishing publicly owned banks. Ways to build alternative forms of community with alternative forms of funding would include cooperatives and worker-owned businesses and new economic entities. We want entities that have human values, that are based on human values, and these would include things like, I mean, my particular area of expertise is publicly owned banks or funding things with publicly owned finance. And then breaking further encroachment on by Wall Street would include stopping TPP, but also we have this move toward austerity and privatization. We had one speech of Jim Silver talked about how the post office is being privatized. And so those are things that we can reverse those trends, and how would we do it? The post office can be saved, we think, possibly with a postal bank, which might fund an infrastructure bank. I mean, there are various possibilities that aren't usually discussed. I've noticed things like, if you look at the 1930s videos of Roosevelt and the New Deal, they always talk about the New Deal and all these amazing things they did, but they don't talk about how they funded it. And how they did fund it was they went around Congress, they did not use taxpayer money, they used the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which is a publicly owned finance institution, which wound up being the largest financial institution in the world. You don't hear about it because it was such a great model for funding everything, creating infrastructure, and we, the people, actually made money off the deal. It not only did not cost us to rebuild the entire country and fund World War II, we, the people, made money off it. So they suppressed that. You never see that in the videos of how Roosevelt did it. You just hear about the things he built, but not how it was funded. So that's the core, it seems to me, of how we can turn all these things around. We have to recapture the money, and we can do that by publicly owned things like publicly owned banks and all these other things we discussed in our chat. Thank you.
So Maria Hayden, from the Participatory Budgeting Network. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Maria could not be here, but wanted to be, and so I agreed to step in my name is Adam Horton. I work for Liberty Tree, and I also helped Maria organize many of the local democracy sessions. And I just wanted to touch on a few things, and I think what Ellen just said about economic running through all the conferences, I think can be very true about local as well. Every issue that we've discussed here over the last 3 days and every conference has organizing that can start locally. And one of the big points, and you know, maybe we should email this out to everyone because I don't know, it's hard to maybe process. I wrote this and I can't even process what I'm looking at right now. But one of the things I know I wrote was that social movements, perhaps even most social movements start at the grassroots level with small groups of people. I think that's something that everyone in this room definitely understands. The other thing we wanted to point out was that local coalition building is at best community building, and at the local level, that's something that can give organizing sort of a deeper meaning and deeper purpose than just winning political victories. Individuals and communities can often have the greatest impact on people's day-to-day lives by focusing on the local. And local governments are powerful, yet often overlooked tools in the pursuit of social justice and greater democracy. And I had the fortune of sitting on a panel with a few other folks who work often in local politics, trying to affect local governments at the city and county level. And that's something that I know we found to be very effective. Others here have found that to be effective. And I encourage everyone to, again, whatever your issue, get involved in local politics. And there's often a vacuum there where, you know, with 100 people packing a room, you can get a lot done because no one comes to these meetings because they're long and boring. So you just have to go to a few to make a difference. So in terms of issues, there's a million issues that can be worked on to advance local democracy. Just a couple here, participatory budgeting. Most folks probably have heard of that if they've been to this convention. It's a system whereby the people directly decide part of all the public budget, and there's a terrific movement in this country and around the world to expand participatory budgeting. Defending civil liberties on the local level. This can include many things, including ending police profiling, police brutality, protecting immigrant rights by passing safe harbor laws to prevent local law enforcement from deporting undocumented immigrants, and protecting free speech at the local level. Establishing a public bank at the city or county level. In fact, I mentioned to Ellen, I said, I want to talk because I know in Madison, there's talk of this. I know around the country, people are looking to do that, especially in states where governments are not friendly to this, but we can start local. And that sort of piggybacks on one of the broader ideas I didn't mention, which is many issues, whether or not they develop with the full social movements, many issues are won by starting local, of course, whether city, county, or state, and building national. Other issues to work on for local organizing, growing the local economy through co-ops, through promoting credit unions, through promoting independent business alliances. And I know two of the workshops featured Liberty Trees and others' efforts to target the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and to organize local businesses and local chambers of commerce to divest from the state chambers and the U.S. Chamber, which are the biggest lobby groups in our country, passing pretty much 100% policies that not only we disagree with, but as Jill pointed out, are literally killing our very planet. And finally, passing local living wage ordinances and sick leave ordinances. I like this a lot, this idea a lot, because it goes back to the idea that at best, coalition building is community building, and that by focusing on the local level, we can improve people's day-to-day lives most directly. I know in Madison, just to speak from personal experience, we worked hard to pass a local living wage ordinance, which the state was so grateful for. They passed the law saying that no municipality could ever supersede the ordinance, the state living wage, or the state minimum wage. So the minimum wage was raised in Madison, and then the state said you can never do that again. So I don't know if that's progress, but it's a step, and I encourage people to look into that. I guess what I want to leave folks with, I don't know if I'm over time. I guess we're
over. You can leave us one more thing.
I can leave one more thing, is that everyone should, this is maybe a convention-wide thing, should check back at our website in the next week or two. We'll also send an email, because all the sessions that we film, we're going to put up, we're going to have audio, we're going to have video, and we're going to have links to all the terrific organizations who are here. Thank you, everyone.
Afternoon, folks. My name is Shimako Noble. This is Dek Abdi. We are with the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign and Hip Hop Congress, and we were participants in the Race and Democracy Convention. And it's just sort of note, it's really, you know, it's called a convergence, right? And that could just be a title, but I think one thing that's a running theme is the recognition that all of these things aren't separate, right?
Right.
And that addressing one requires addressing all of them, right? And that, and by fully addressing one of them, you automatically have to deal with all of them, right? So that's important. Just a couple of points here. First, the struggle to overcome white supremacy is becoming critical to the success of the movement as a whole. The legacy of people as property is reflected in our ability to transition as a society into seeing the planet as sacred as opposed to private property. Right, and so I think that this is interesting because this is something I believe that our keynote speaker today sort of brought up, right? And so in one of our discussions, what we talked about was, you know, the legacy of slavery, and people will say stuff like, why do you keep bringing that up, right? And part of the reason is because the sort of capitalist colonialist structure that identified people as property is still in play, right? Yeah. And in fact, what we, you know, one of the things that we sort of brought to light today was the earth right, as a consciousness or as a spirit that is also being treated and viewed as property. These things are not separate. These things are connected, right? The reality of white supremacy and institutional racism as a structure of oppression is both being agitated and addressed as dispossession sets into many different parts of America, right? So, you know, on the one hand, you have, you know, with the election of Obama, the sort of rise of the Tea Party. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the website stormfront.org, but, you know, it's a white nationalist website. Its readership grew 400% after Obama's last election.
Wow.
So that's kind of one reality. On the other hand, we're having this conversation, right? And we're having this conversation in this space. So it's being pushed to the forefront as we have to deal with sort of the reality of our situation. And I think another thing that's come up a lot, right, is the impact of dispossession. And so Occupy is sort of a direct result of that dispossession. And one thing you'll hear a lot is, we've been dealing with that for years, right, from different groups. But what it does is it creates the opportunity for us to work collectively on a new vision for our planet, right? So this is an important thing. Anyone has that? Or just keep going. The election of Obama did not herald the end of racism in America. Figure that, right? And the tradition of divide and oppress continues. Sorry for the deep. We must continue to educate ourselves and each other. So this is something that came up in several of our panels, that the reality of white supremacy isn't necessarily just about non-white people. In fact, white people are now suffering from the impacts of white supremacy at an extremely high level. And the importance of having dialogue, of having education around this is critical. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the immigration panel.
Yeah,
that came up there too.
My name is Deck Dobby, like you said, and I was on the immigration panel as well. And what two things that we discussed was that immigrants in this country feel it's built on fear. So it's not only they're divided because immigrants are divided amongst themselves into subgroups of ones that don't speak English, and then ones that have the right papers, and then ones that do speak English. So they're divided in that matter, and then they're also divided from the regular community because there's fear and the regular population that these people are taking over American culture or American society and turn it into a whole new thing. So that's another thing that we discussed.
We do want to turn it into a whole new thing.
Right. And then kind of last final points here. While we must grapple with race, we must also recognize that our interests as a class or as a collective cannot be met without unity and cooperation, right? So this is both a statement and kind of a visioning piece. I feel like what should have been added here also was what our speaker talked about today, which was this process being rooted in love, right? Love for ourselves, love for the collective, love for the planet. And sort of the last piece, democracy has no color, but then neither does poverty or death. That's it. Thank you.
I'm Harvey Branscombe from Western Colorado. Harvey Branscombe from Western Colorado. I was at the Representative Democracy portion of this convention. It was a really intense time, actually, mainly because it's very hard for us to have conversations about voting and access to the ballot, because there are so many different laws in so many different states. Every state's in a different place. But one thing that is in common is that our elections are basically gradually being taken away from the people, and we need to take them back. They're being transferred away from, we're trying to achieve a verifiable election. That's our long-term goal. And the best way we can do it is to try to ensure we have paper ballots, and people are actually counting our ballots at one time or another. And at this conference, we spent a full day actually demonstrating how to hand count ballots. And a fairly substantial number of people showed up to actually practice that. It's really essential that you have the experience to understand how feasible it actually is, in spite of so much pressure from the election officials saying we really can't afford to, it doesn't work, et cetera, et cetera. It does actually work. But meanwhile, we've got cost and convenience and pressure for speed of reporting election results actually pressuring us away from access to our own ballots and our own elections. We need to turn that back. We had sessions on auditing and recount. We had sessions on how to be effective in legislative activism on elections, and a great session in which John Washburn took apart some voting systems for us and showed us where there are secret places to put SD cards that could have radios in them so that a voting machine could possibly communicate even without visible evidence of that. It was a, and we had some really interesting experts around the country come together here to share notes and try to develop a consensus about a way to move forward. So we're looking forward to everybody's involvement. Anytime you see it, this is a local issue actually. It's a county issue for you, it's a state issue for you, and we need you to come out when you hear the call about the need for testimony about public access to ballots and taking back our elections. Thank you.
Thank you, presenters. So much stuff, tough stuff too. And to cram it into 3 minutes, let's hear it for the presenters. So the time check and the clock is ticking, and we want to you'll be able to get on the road on time.
Turn it off. Zach, we want you to get on the road on time, and we also want your input. So, first of all, we had planned on a lot more time for input, and that's dwindled away and with the late start. But we want to get a little bit. So the question is, how can we build the broader movement, one movement, by making connections between our 9 conference issues. And it's this is really workable, because in the beginning, when we said what conference we attended, people put up their hands in a number of conferences, didn't you? So you got a feel for those connections. We really only have time for maybe 4-5 input in a hot minute. And so if you're really strong and already have in your mind how to do it, please come to the mic, and we'll move on after that. Okay. Again, how do we connect these issues? Thank you so much.
My name is Michael Polito, and just a thought for moving forward for future conferences and things like this. All these great people, when we network and we interchange, like share information emails, just a thought when registering for the conference, if we had a way to, and this is by way of trying to converge and work together, you know, our names, our information, what organizations we're with, what we do for those organizations, all our contact information, social media, we could even upload maybe a photo of ourselves, things like that, and have a database of that where we can kind of all be linked to together, so we can all work together and converge and connect that way moving forward. And that way the next conference, we can all be like essentially the advertising marketing team for the next conference, get all our friends and just kind of crescendo, make it bigger and bigger and bigger, and build a movement. Thank
somebody
you. My name is Jim Miller, and all of these conventions had something in common. We're all working on these issues because we don't have representatives who are taking care of these things for us.
Right.
So we're trying to substitute for the representation we don't have. We don't have the representation that we want because we have winner-take-all elections. I'm pushing that we should acknowledge that we all have the civil right to the representation of our choice. And I think if we all worked on that together and pushed forward, we could get the representation that we want and deserve, and we could get all these issues taken care of.
I think that this model is important because what it does is it takes a bunch of silos and sticks them in the same place and makes them deal with each other. And when it's done and over, you can't help but notice you're all dealing, at the end of the day, we're all dealing with the same thing. So I think that we have to, in our language, in our action, in our thought process, and in our work, we have to make a commitment to eliminating the silos. We have to make a commitment to removing the separations and the barriers that have been very intentionally put in place to keep us from recognizing that at the end of the day, we're all basically after the same things. So that's it.
Yeah, my name is Nate Tim.
I'm here speaking on behalf of Wisconsin Grassroots Network. We were not very engaged in this conference because we were engaged doing a lot of work at the grassroots level outside of this conference. So one of the suggestions that I would have is that there really be an effort, and we would have fit into that local channel probably mostly, that a real effort be made to reach out to organizations that didn't get, for whatever reason, represented here this time, and to try to find out who those are. And I know that there's going to be a period of time of planning in between. We have a lot of contacts with other organizations doing our kind of work, so we would be really interested in facilitating that. And I think that's a really a crucial part of this, reaching out in between the two sessions, trying to broaden the representation so we can actually make it a broader movement. That's part of how we do that. Thank you.
Thank you. We had to cut off because we agreed we're going to be out at 4. We got a couple housekeeping things right now. My apologies to those of you who wanted to speak. You will be emailed a form so that you can contribute that would go into our staff. Beyond that, you will be emailed a form so that you can answer this question, how do we connect? So I thank you for your cooperation. We all agreed we want to get out at 4:00. Want to hit this real quick. This is a project of the Liberty Tree Foundation. In terms of those cards, you can hand them out at the desk when you leave through the door. They'll be collected there. So this is the project of the Liberty Tree Foundation. I want to mention our board of directors, Medea Benjamin from Washington, D.C., Karen Dolan, who's not with us, from Tacoma Park, Maryland, Ben Mansky from Santa Barbara, California. Hey, Ben. George Martin from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Who's he? Jill Stein, Lexington, Massachusetts. And Victor Wallace, who had to leave earlier from Somerville, Massachusetts. Also want to recognize the key staff that put the work into this. Our national director, Adam Horton. Jolie Legat, Laura Brickman, David Schwab, Omar Sawark Descartes, James Taylor, Christian Hansen, Kaylee Thornby, Kathy Freed, and of course, to get anything done, the volunteers. Any volunteers present, please stand up. And we especially want to recognize Dace Zips. She was at the desk. We all met her and we all know her. Hey. And Adam.
You want me to stand
up? Come on, Adam.
George, you're the one to say no to you. So.
When I founded Liberty Tree in 2004, somebody told me that it was important to have luck. To have luck in the office, to have luck at home, get a money tree. And here we have, for Adam Horton, a Liberty Tree. To take care of, to water from time to time, not with the hearts of tyrants or patriots, but with care and with a sense of great achievement here and in the coming years. Adam, thanks for your incredible work these past years and for moving forward.
Thank you.
And of course, our 9 conferences, the One Movement, our 9 conference conveners, the many, many speakers, and all of you who made input, who helped adjust and evolve this thing. We thank you so very much for coming. Our country needs this democracy convention. Our country needs a real, true democracy. And that's us, and that's every one of you. Please join me. Hip, hip!
Hooray!
Hip, hip!
Hooray!
Hip, hip!
Hooray!
Peace and love. And it's 3:59.
time for one more comment then.